Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of After Work Drinks with our weekly interview series that we release every Saturday night.
Or sometimes Saturday day, because heaps of the people that we interview live in LA or New York, and if we release it at nighttime, it is the middle of the night for them. So it's just whenever.
You'll get it when you get it, okay? Don't ask questions. Yeah.
And we also didn't address the fact that it's now weekly, but we decided what the hell else are we doing right now, really? And we have so many amazing people lined up that we thought we're just going to keep throwing episodes at your face.
Yes. So this week we are so excited to be talking to Mary Beth Barone. Mary Beth is one of New York City's most exciting new comedians, and she is known for her frankly iconic Drag His Ass show and accompanying viral hilarious meme Instagram account, and it's been dubbed the recovery program for fuckboy addicts, which I think many of us listening can relate to.
Yeah, so Mary Beth, we found her on Instagram a while ago and we both became obsessed with her. She's so funny. We actually posted her on After Work Drinks a while back and we just love her. Her humor is exactly up our alley. It's very dry. She's a self-proclaimed fuckboy addict and she's in recovery at the moment. She's been 116 days, I think it is, without a fuckboy. And so we chat to her all about men, dating, coming out of a relationship, what to look out for, also dating women and whether there are just as many female fuckboys as male fuckboys.
She just encapsulates, I think, so much of the spectrum of dating culture in terms of the fact that it can actually be very psychologically damaging to be ghosted, and we all joke about it, but then she kind of does it in a way that's not so serious that it gets heavy or hectic or dull. It's the perfect mix.
Yeah, and also she is Paper Magazine's dating columnist, so she writes incredible things for their website.
Yes, and she was listed by Time Out as one of the 30 under 30s making New York City cool again, which is pretty major.
So we're going to pass it over to that interview. Bye.
Enjoy. Bye. Rate, review, and subscribe. Bye.
Hi, Mary Beth. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
So firstly, you're quarantining at your parents' house, right? How are you finding that and just isolation as a whole?
It's been pretty hard. I think the first 2 weeks was the worst, just getting used to not performing and not being able to see people and not go out and just getting used to this new lifestyle. Then I came to Connecticut after I isolated for 2 weeks. And so I've been here for over a month now and it feels almost normal, which I was scared for it to get to this point because I don't want it to feel like this is normal life, but I definitely have my routine now and just trying to like keep myself busy and make stuff, even though obviously traditional formats are not available right now. So it's weird. It's nice to be home. I feel like I'm kind of falling back into my old ways though, because I'm the youngest of six kids and I'm very youngest child. I have a very youngest child energy. So that's coming out a bit more, I think, for better or worse.
Well, yeah, that's, we wanted to ask you a bit what you were like as a kid and in high school, but I know whenever I go home, and you're probably the same, Izzy, I just revert back to being like all the worst parts of myself as a teenager.
I literally arrive home and just kind of collapse on the ground, and I'm like, I physically can't do anything for myself anymore. I've been doing my own washing, my own cooking, everything for fucking years. I just need someone to do it for me. My mum's like, okay.
Yeah, I just want to be taken care of. I just want to be like a little baby. So it's, I guess as a kid, my dad got all of our home movies digitized. So we've been revisiting those over the last like year. And I guess as a kid, I was like pretty similar to how I am now. Like I took playtime very seriously. Like it was not a game to me. Playtime was like business. And I was definitely very performative as a kid. There's a lot of videos of me just being like a complete like clown just for my siblings' entertainment. But I was a bit of a brat. I mean, not like super spoiled, but I definitely was like, I want things my way or not at all. And I think that carried through to adulthood as well, which I mean, I just want what I want, you know, I think that's fine. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed. And when was it that you kind of realized that comedy, that you wanted to get into comedy and that it could be an actual career?
So I didn't start doing comedy until I was 24. I had dropped out of college when I was 20 and moved to New York. And then I worked at a startup in startups for 4 years or so before I started doing comedy. And looking back at videos, actually, it's like really clear to me that that was what I always should have been focused on doing. But I just didn't see performing as like a viable career. So as a kid, I wanted to be an actress. I thought that was very like glamorous, and I didn't really know what it took to be an actress, but that was always kind of my dream. And then in high school, I shifted gears. I thought I wanted to go to college and study to be an English teacher. So it wasn't until I dropped out, moved to New York, and got really settled in New York City that I decided to try improv. And then from there, it was a pretty quick turnaround. I had been living with my boyfriend, and we were going to get engaged, and we had a pretty stable life. And then I started doing comedy, and I was like, wait, this is what I want to do, and I don't want to do any of that anymore. So that's wow. When I kind of doubled down and quit my job, moved out of our apartment. I obviously had to get full-time jobs, you know, since then, but I was pretty, as soon as I started doing stand-up, I was pretty sure that that was what I wanted to do. So it just became about like how I could support myself in doing that. And then I no longer work full-time as of almost a year ago, which is really nice, because doing both was like, it was a lot.
So like stand-up comedy is kind of most people's worst fear realized. Is that the case for you and you just push through it, or do you just not feel that thing that most people kind of feel towards performing?
I guess I just don't. It's definitely, I get nervous even still. And like, it's obviously, you know, it's almost like jumping out of a plane without a parachute, because you're just like, you have no idea how it's going to go. But I just always found the rush of it outweighed the fear. And for that reason, I just loved it and knew it. I don't know. It was like after my first open mic, I just had this feeling, and I am constantly now, you're always just chasing that feeling, and you want to do more shows and bigger shows and better shows. And writing jokes is just so satisfying to me, and then performing them in front of an audience. I guess I just like was born without that terror that people have when it comes to like public speaking. But it's definitely scary, and it doesn't always go well. So you have to just kind of brace yourself for that and be okay with, you know, having bad shows every now and then.
Because I can imagine that like sometimes you must write something and be like, this is gonna kill, and just no one gets it. And then sometimes you have like a weird joke that you don't think is even that funny, and people are like, oh my God. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's, I usually run my jokes by my gay best friend, Jake, who has a pretty good sense of like what people are gonna find funny. But sometimes there's jokes where I think it's so funny, and he's like, I don't know, that one's kind of hard to like get there. And then I'll do it in front of an audience, and he was totally right. But then there are jokes that I've written where people laugh at like a different point than what the punchline is. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's the punchline. Like sometimes I don't even realize what I'm saying is actually kind of dumb, and then people will laugh at that part. And I'm like, wait, though, but that's not the joke yet. But then that becomes a joke, and that's how you learn.
Yeah, I think that's even with us with our podcast in a sense, because it's us just chatting and we're best friends, and then we'll just talk and we get messages from people being like, that was so fucking funny when you were talking about.
And it's like the dumbest aside that we weren't even thinking about. Like the other day, Izzy was like, I just love Leslie Mann. And I was like, that's random, but fine. And then like people just like messaged us about it for some reason. We didn't even think twice.
You don't know it's going to resonate with people. It's often those like, sometimes, you know, I'll deliver a joke and then I'll make like a one throwaway comment after, and then that will get a big laugh. And I'm like, okay, well, that's like, now that's part of it, which is why performing live is so important. And like in quarantine, it's been painful to not be able to tell jokes. So I did a show, and I put that in quotes, for my parents and my brother and his girlfriend and my cousin, who all are here. And we invited some neighbors over to sit on the porch, and we like opened the window, and I did like a 5-minute set, and it just was not the same. It just didn't.
I was like, yes, that sounds like the word.
Yeah, no, it's really hard.
The neighbors, they're just like, oh.
There are like it's the neighbor's kids, so they're like young. But then we actually FaceTimed in my two former roommates from before I moved to the West Village. And so I could hear them laughing too, but it just didn't work. And that's when I realized like, okay, this is not the solution that I've been waiting for. So I just have to come up with something else.
Yeah. So you blew up as a comedian when you started Drag His Ass, the show, which is all about calling out fuckboy behavior. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about how that concept came about? I assume a few fuckboys.
More than I'd care to admit. I identify as like a fuckboy addict. So I was hooking up. I've been single for over 4 years now, and I've hooked up with a lot of bad people, been on dates with a lot of bad people. And basically I just decided like I had been fed up with it for a while, but I wasn't actually holding myself accountable. So I bought a whiteboard. I now make these ones that are like for this specifically. I bought a whiteboard where I
Okay, for the people listening, it's a whiteboard that says 107 days fuckboy free.
Yes.
And we're very proud.
And that's actually, I need to update it. But before I just had like a regular whiteboard I bought. And I had written fuckboy free for X number of days. I wanted to get to 100 days. And I had some slip ups, definitely, where I had to reset it to zero. And that obviously sucks. But throughout that process, I would like post on social media and people were really supportive. So I figured like I'll create a live show where I talk about my treatment program for fuckboy addiction and then have other comedians come on and talk about their experiences. And after the first show, it was so fun. And it was like mostly women in the crowd and it just felt like a really good vibe. So I decided to move it to a bigger venue and then start doing fuckboy redemptions, which is where I bring on a fuckboy to talk about what they've done. We try to get to the bottom of like why they are the way that they are. And then I have them do like a pledge to be better, which obviously, you know, I don't follow them around after that. I don't know if they're still up to their old ways, but it's been really fun.
We need
fun.
To check in.
Yeah. I'm sad because now fuckboys are just out there and I can't help them because we can't chat in front of a live audience. So
we actually talked about this just before we started recording, but I've recently come out of a 5-year relationship, like right before lockdown. So I'm about to kind of dip my toes back into the dating scene. And I feel like it's very different out there. Can you tell me what I need to look out for and what the fuckboy treatment program is?
Yeah. So, there's just so many red flags because fuckboys come in like all shapes and sizes. I have like this thing I show at Drag His Ass that's a fuckboy starter pack. It's someone who, you know, wears joggers, they wear a big watch, maybe they have thigh tattoos, they like to vape, they vape anywhere and everywhere, they'll slide into your DMs. There's a lot of them, a lot of signs, but some people that are like that are good. And then there's a lot of people who are kind of like a wolf in sheep's clothing. So they'll lure you in and then reveal themselves as fuckboys down the line. So I guess my advice to you would be just like make your expectations clear and always communicate. And people will straight up lie to you. I mean, that's what happened to me. People just lie. They don't care about other people's feelings. But I do feel like after quarantine, maybe people will clean up their act a little bit because I know there's a lot of lonely people right now who wish that they maybe had someone to quarantine with. And I'm just hopeful that this pandemic will fix them, which we'll have to find out when it's over.
Mm. Do you think that fuckboys is a modern phenomenon, or that the behavior's gotten worse recently, or that we just now have the name to describe toxic behavior men have always used in dating?
I think it's been around forever. There's been different versions of it. Like, if you watch Mad Men, I would consider Don Draper a fuckboy. I think Jesus was a fuckboy. Thomas Jefferson was a fuckboy. Like, they've exhibited their behaviors throughout history, but now we have this very specific term. And that's what's funny to me when older people ask me, like, what does it mean to be a fuckboy? Like, people not in our generation, because it's basically someone who will just lie to sleep with people, and then there's no accountability or, like, responsibility taken for those actions after you have sex with them. So that's definitely something that's been going on for a long time. But I just think fuckboys have a much bigger footprint now because of social media and dating apps, and the access is just more than it used to be. Like, before, maybe you could be taking a few girls out in your neighborhood, but now you can be sexting with 20 people in a day, and none of the people know that you're, you know what I mean? So it's just, I think there's just more tactics for them to use nowadays.
The Instagram account Beam Me Up Softboy is, like, my favorite thing in history. And I think that...
Yeah, we want to get the founder on, but we don't even know who they are. Yeah.
And I think that...
But it's wild.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly describes the fuckboys who are kind of undercover as the boys who, you know, read the novels and they know all your favorite songs, and then they ghost.
Please,
and they're
tell
the
me
worst kind.
Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Yes, of course. Yeah, they... I know. It's like, guys will, this is what I would just say to watch out for. Guys love to lure you in by being really emotionally vulnerable and tell you a lot of things about, like, their life and their relationship with their parents and their exes. And then they'll just pull the rug out from under you and gaslight you and be like, I'm not looking for anything serious. And it's like, okay, but you told me all this stuff and, like, made me feel like you were, like, letting me in a little bit, but they're all full of shit. And not all of them, but all fuckboys are, I think.
And long-term relationships really kind of, they gaslight you in themselves, because you come out after having someone love you for so long and that you just think you can get anyone. Like, literally, I was like that woman from Bridesmaids at her engagement party where you're just like, I'm just going to go find me another man. And yeah. Then it's just not like that. It's just dire.
It's not like that, unfortunately. And I'm a living testament to that. But, you know, all these experiences have made me stronger, I think. I mean, like, I had an experience at the end of last year that really pushed me over the edge. So now I just don't want to accept anything less than what I deserve.
Yes.
Amen. We wanted to ask a bit, because there seems to be a trend with people, but especially women, who kind of mine their personal lives for their work, so whether that's stand-up or writing, that people then seem to kind of feel entitled to just ask you whatever the fuck they want, or, like, to know the intimate details of your dating life. Like, does that get weird when interviewers or people are like, so are you dating? Like, I was listening to some interviews today and I was kind of shocked at how personal maybe people think they can be with you just because you talk about it in your work.
Yeah, it's really funny you bring that up, because I feel like I'm like, I have a lot of contradictions. I'm a Gemini, so I feel like I definitely am a textbook Gemini in that, like, I don't like to be super open with people who I like when I'm talking one-on-one, but on stage I'll talk about anything. So I think people see me on stage and they're like, oh, well, she's an open book because she's telling me all these crazy personal details about, like, this previous situation. And then, yeah, I would say there's a lot of people who like to probe and get super personal. I don't really mind it right now because I'm not like that well known. So I feel like maybe some of this stuff could come back to haunt me in the future. But right now it feels like if sharing my story is going to help someone else, then I'm like totally comfortable doing that. But there have been times where I've been like, whoa, okay, they're really going deep right now. And maybe that's my fault for setting a standard that, like, I will talk about anything. I don't know who's accountable in that situation, but.
Mm. So you wrote a column for Paper. You've started writing dating columns for them, which we both love, about how the pandemic might actually turn things around for singles. Can you explain that thinking?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the issue with dating before the pandemic was people would sleep together immediately and then expectations hadn't been set or people hadn't been clear about what they were looking for. So feelings get hurt, I think, a lot of times in those situations. So what I've observed with the pandemic is that since people can't hang out in person, they are actually taking the time to get to know each other and putting effort in other ways than just like going out to drinks, getting a little buzzed and then having sex and then not really knowing what to do next. So I'm hoping that this will remind people, and myself included, that you don't have to rush into being physical with someone. You can get to know them first and see if they're even someone that you would want to date. Like, I think a lot of my frustration comes from the fact that I would like put people on a pedestal a little bit before I would even know them that well. And then when they would ghost me, I would be so hurt, but I don't even know what their flaws are yet, you know? So maybe if we had just gotten to know each other more, I would have been not into it myself. So I just think taking more time to get to know someone is going to help everyone in the long run.
Yeah, I do that too, where I kind of just dive in head first, and I've been trying so hard to not do that. Cause you just, I think it's like, I'm a romantic and also I'm obsessed with people liking me. So then I just want them to like me, and it's not even, I probably don't even like them.
I feel I'm a romantic as well. And I think this current dating climate has been really hard for romantic people because you always want to see the best in others and hope that things will work out. But not everyone's like that. And that can be tough for sure.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, speaking of getting personal, I'd written down that you said in one of your column responses that you were 28 when you started respecting yourself. And I think that would resonate with a lot of our listeners. Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
For some reason, when I turned 28, I just realized that like, I don't feel like an adult, but I guess I am technically at 28. Yeah. So I just felt like I need to respect myself before I can start demanding it from others. So even though I got myself into some situations that I'm not proud of in the last year, I just felt like I did raise my standards. And like, it took me this long in like the dating world. And obviously, you know, I've had crushes on boys since I was a little girl, like in kindergarten, you know, so it's been a long journey of like liking people and being disappointed or having long relationships and falling out of love. And I don't know, for some reason when I was 28, I just decided like, you are worth a lot more than you're giving yourself credit for. And it's time to start acting like it, and not in a cocky way where I'm like, I'm too good for everyone. More just like, I value myself. And if that's not what I'm projecting, then no one's going to value me.
And sometimes you can kind of realize that like intellectually, and it takes a really long time to actually like get it. Like, I feel like I've had so many times where you kind of have that eureka moment, and then all of a sudden it's been 3 years and you're fucking back there again, and you're like, how did we get back here?
I know,
it's
kind of so
like
tricky.
Actually enacting it is so fucking hard.
Well, there is a disconnect between like knowing something is true and then actually putting that into action. So I've been in therapy for like 3 years, and I have made a lot of progress in some areas and not so much in others. But I think it is a constant struggle because I'm really good at making excuses for other people, especially when I like them. So I feel like I've done that in the past, but in those times I was not putting myself first. And that's really what it comes down to, I think, for me.
Pivoting onto something slightly different, as a comedian, obviously your job is to make people laugh. And I can imagine that people can maybe sometimes forget that that's your job and just expect you to be on all the time. Is that kind of a thing that you deal with in your life?
Definitely. I mean, it helps that my stand-up is like pretty deadpan. And so no one's expecting me to come in and like, you know, be the loud kind of outgoing voice in the room. I definitely like to be social, but I struggle to be social in groups of comedians because it's like people constantly trying to one-up each other and be the funny one and like who can riff off what this person said and like who can be the center of attention. So I really value my friendships with non-comedians and comedians as well. I love to like have friendships with them one-on-one, but I do think when it's a group of us together, it can just become, it's too much for me. I can't handle it. I like need a nap after. And I do think though, some people, and even when I started doing comedy, some people are like, but you're not funny. And I'm like, well, maybe I'm not like, you know, dressed as a clown and appeal, but there's different ways of being funny than just that, I think.
So you've been open about the fact that you recently started dating women. Do you find that dating scene different, and are there less female fuckboys?
So there are definitely female fuckboys. When it comes down to the numbers, I'm not sure where things break down, but dating women is so different, at least in my experience. And I've dated a lot more men than I have women, but I dated someone last summer, and it was, that was the first woman I had been with. And it was just a totally different experience. There was a lot more like checking in and talking about feelings and talking about what we wanted. And it was almost like going from dating men to that was like, whoa, this is crazy different, because men aren't as good at communicating. That's something I know for sure. And I have not been like, I guess I have had dating apps at certain points in the past. So, you know, you would have like girls and guys turned on for your settings. And I just feel like you should be able to have two different profiles if that's the case, because guys want you to look kind of like hot and dumb, whereas girls want you to look.
Oh my God, yes. I've been like very much stressing out about this dating app thing.
We've been working on the profile.
It's hard when you're looking for both, because the things that appeal to guys aren't necessarily going to appeal to girls. Even with Hinge, I remember even the questions that you would have, like, is something that's funny to a guy that I know is like straight guy humor, a girl would see that and be like, what the fuck, you know? So it's a balance for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, we briefly touched on it earlier, but being ghosted is something that basically every millennial's had to deal with. And it can be kind of incredibly difficult to want to open up again and even go back to dating. What's your experience been there in terms of trusting again, I guess?
It's really hard to build that back up, because it's just being ghosted, especially after you sleep with someone. If you've been on a few dates with someone and they ghost you, that's shitty, obviously. But if you've had sex with them and they do it, that's just, it's like a real knife to the chest. And it made me really scared to open up to people or let them in at all. So especially because I got to a point where I was being very upfront with my expectations with people. Like before we would have sex, I would be like, just so you know, I'm not looking for a one night stand. So if we have sex, I expect to hang out again. Like I'm going to want to like see where this goes type of thing. And there were just so many times where guys would be like, yeah, of course. And then that was not actually their intention. So I think as far as being able to open up again, that's something I definitely had to work towards in therapy, because my therapist always says like, the fear of getting hurt is often worse than actually getting hurt. So I try to remind myself of that when I'm trying to open up to someone new, because I just like inherently don't trust people now. But it's, again, as you said, like I am a romantic. So in my heart, I still believe that there are good people out there who are worth like taking a risk for. I guess I'm just trying, I've been very closed off to dating in the last like year or so. Like I'm not trying to pursue dating right now, if that makes sense, because I'm just so scared of getting hurt, which is like really sad actually.
I feel the same.
There's a self-protective mechanism that kicks in once it's happened a few times. We always tell our listeners, because we found out recently that we have listeners that are in high school, which freaks us out, because that's like a young mind that we're melding. Mm-hmm.
And we were like, never date a drummer or a photographer.
Yeah, no musicians.
Any piece of advice.
No sports. Yeah, no sportsmen.
Yeah, there's a long list of people not to date. I don't really know who is. I don't know what profession is like good nowadays.
I would say musicians are just a no-go zone, and every woman has fucking been there.
Musicians, especially if it's like a male singer-songwriter who like is like, I just think how narcissistic you'd have to be. I mean, as someone who does stand-up comedy, I'm like, obviously I have narcissistic tendencies also, but like how much of a narcissist do you have to be to like write songs and think people want to like hear? I don't know. It's just like male musicians. I can't with them. I just can't.
Me either.
No, it's a phase we all have to go through. So you've talked a bit in interviews about how you've been quite kind of strategic about building up your career, which we loved, because sometimes I think people don't want to admit that they're doing a lot of planning behind the scenes. Yeah. So can you talk about how you strategized your career, because you've been very successful in a very short amount of time, and what your kind of plans are going forward?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for saying that. I wonder what it will take for me to feel like I'm successful. Maybe if I like win an EGOT, like if I EGOT, then I'll be like, okay, cool, I did it. But when I go to sleep at night, I'm like, you're not doing enough. So I guess the thinking for me, previously to doing comedy, I was like a project manager, which is very like you plan things out and you execute them. And it's very, there is a lot of strategy behind it. So I wanted to view my career and approach it as a business. I'm basically starting my own company, but the product I'm selling is me. So just being really thoughtful about like what I'm putting out and making sure that it's always my best work, and also putting things out. I think a lot of writers and creatives are their own worst enemy, in that they don't actually want to like, they like to talk about making things and then not actually doing it. So early on, I was really like determined to not be one of those people, and to, if I had an idea for something, to actually sit down and do it and like figure out what's the best release strategy and what's the best platform to put this out and how often should I be posting. And up to now, it was really important to me to put stand-up online, because I think a lot of people see like a young female and maybe they think that I am not a good joke writer, that I don't write jokes, or that, you know, I'm just an internet comedian or whatever that is. So it was always important to me to make sure that I had jokes online. Obviously, I'm pretty much going through all my material that I have filmed right now, because I can't perform live. And by the time we get out of the pandemic, I don't think most of those jokes will be relevant anymore. So it's been just trying to think about like, if I'm my target audience, what do I want to see? And then making it and putting it out there. And it's really scary. I would say putting things online is more scary than doing stand-up, because it's there forever. But just sometimes I'll have to text my friends and be like, tell me to post this right now, because otherwise I won't do it. And then they're like, just do it. Just shut up and do it. And then it's like, it always ends up being fine. But I think it's like just being thoughtful about, you know, what my voice is and how I'm delivering that to people. That's always been really important to me.
I think we feel the same with even just with the kind of self-promotion thing. And I think it's so much more of an issue for women, because we're just not used to it at all. Like, we got featured the other day. Just, it's not even a big deal, but I was like, our followers and also advertisers and people who need to see that we're doing well, we need to post these sorts of things. And both of us would, I text Grace and I was like, this is cringe, I don't want to post it. And she was like, I don't want to fucking post it either. And then no one even thinks everyone's just doesn't have any idea what's going on.
And then you post it and everyone's like, this is great, we're so happy for you, and everything's so positive, but you just feel, yeah.
It's your inner saboteur. That's what they say on Drag Race. It's like,
that's out the
that's
name.
Our last episode was,
oh,
called.
Cool. Yeah, they're just, it's that voice in your head, but it's not in anyone else's head. I'm sure there's like people that talk shit about me and what I post, but I don't care. You know, like I need to, I feel the same way when I have to like post a screenshot of something, but it's like, this is my work. Like, I want people to know about it, and they're not going to know if you don't tell them. So it's a very tough, like, it's inner turmoil for me, but ultimately you just have to like keep putting yourself out there.
We wanted to touch on the kind of success ambition question that you kind of brought up before, because it seems like everyone we talk to are people who are very successful in their field and very good at what they do, and there's like a shared thing of never quite feeling like you're good enough or never feeling like you've hit the thing. And we've spoken to actresses and writers who've kind of said, I'll be like, all I wanted to do, like we talked to this actress, Nesta Cooper, last week, and she was like, all I wanted to do was get a Netflix show. And then I booked the lead on a Netflix show. And all I could think about was 10 other actresses that had done that when they were 21 instead of 25 or whatever. And it's just kind of amazing that if your barometer is just ahead of whatever you're doing, it kind of doesn't even matter what you achieve because you're always disappointed.
I know. And my friends have to remind me, like, it's something that maybe it's just the people that get into this industry all have that in common because they always want to know, like, what's the next thing? What's coming up? I'm not doing enough. Like, maybe that's just a sensibility that people in this field share. But it is really hard because no matter what happens, I'm always wanting to know, like, what's the next step? What's the next thing? And even in my personal life, I find that that comes up a lot. Like, I really struggle to just be excited about the present moment. And so even with, like, dating, it's like if I like someone, I'm like, okay, but then I try to plan out, like, what are the different ways that this could go? And then I'm like, okay, well, when do we get to the next step? Like, what's the – and that's just, like, not – I work on this in therapy too, just trying to, like, enjoy the moment and be excited. But it's really hard. Like, it's just – it's something I struggle with. It's just like, okay, I got this cool – even when this, like, Time Out Women of the Year thing came out, which was, like, women who are making New York cooler, I was like, okay, cool, like, but what's the next thing? Where it's like, no, you can, like – people are texting me being like, that's so cool. That's like amazing that you were like in that group. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine, but it is cool. And I should be okay with, like, you know what I mean? It's just my brain.
We need to check in with each other all the time about this. So I'll message Grace and I'm like, even last night we were on the phone and she was like, remember when we said, this is how many listeners we wanted to get. And then we passed that weeks ago and we just haven't even talked about it. We're just like, okay, what's fucking next?
Yeah, we're like, oh my god, but it's not this much. Like, it's just so silly.
No, it's sick. I think, like, for me, part of it comes down to, like, I like to compartmentalize and, like, keep things in the little box so that I can, like, put it away when I'm done. And I think if I just have, like, laser focus on what comes next, for some reason that's easier to do, but it's not good. You guys should be excited. It's, like, amazing to reach your goals. It's like, that's insane that a goal and then reach it. It's actually crazy.
Yeah, my therapist has been a very big help as well. And it's funny because you said a quote from your therapist just before and we've basically been quoting mine nonstop because I started seeing her weekly when I was going through the breakup, basically a month before the breakup I started seeing her. And then it was like this turmoil, this insane time. It was horrible. It was like literally the worst time of my life. And then now we're coming out the other side and we're actually working on these little things, which I guess I probably would never have even gone to therapy for in the first place until there was like a big issue that I needed to fix. And then now I'm realizing that all these little things, like what you're saying, is working on your ambition and working on being in the present and working on wanting to be by yourself first is just so important. But I think people put off therapy until it's like there's a big issue that you need to go and fix.
The therapy is so interesting to me for a few reasons, and one of them is like, well, I firmly believe, like, whenever you start going to therapy, that's the right time, because you can't go, like, no one can force you have to be ready to do it, otherwise it's going to be a waste of time. But the other thing is, like, what I started going to therapy for, I don't even talk about anymore. Like, what actually was the kick in the butt to get me to go to therapy, we bring up in the last 5 minutes of a session, maybe like once a month. But that was just what I needed to, like, push me over the edge to finally go. And then the real healing started when we got through that and, like, onto other things that are now the bulk of what we discuss. So it's just so, I feel like a lot of people have that experience, and it's like, I don't know. I'm like a huge proponent of therapy, obviously. So good for you for going. I think that's great.
I love her. I'm like seeing her fortnightly every...
Izzy's footing the bill for our entire listenership because she just, like, basically parrots out the whole...
I know. I'm like, if she ever fucking listens to this, she's going to be like, you legally can't, like, basically record me and play it to your listeners.
You're fixing too many people.
Yeah.
The last thing that I wanted to ask, because we're obviously aware that we've kept you for a while, but any entertainment-focused industry... obviously, there is an element of feeling like there's a limited amount of spots
for people, you know, and I think for women as well, there tends to be this cultural thing that pushes us into thinking that the already small amount of women are our competition and we need to be against them instead of rallying with them. Have you kind of found a good way of having a support network in the industry and vying out of that attitude of competing instead of collaborating?
Yeah, I think having peers that you can become friends with and confide in is so important because they know what you're going through. Like, there are definitely moments that I have where I will see something someone else is doing and I'll be, you know, I'll screenshot it and send it to my friend and be like, oh, this is so frustrating. But I made a big point to not do that this past year. Like, I wanted to really just keep my eyes on my own paper and focus on what I was doing, because what I've come to realize is that no one has the career that I want. Only I can have that. Like, no one's doing what I'm doing, and when I see what other people are doing, now I can be genuinely happy for them instead of feeling jealous and like things are unfair or that we're pitted against each other. It's like, I'm so happy for the women that are in my like generation of comedy, because I feel like people are really creating their own space and they have their own unique voice. Because if you have a unique voice, you don't have to worry about someone else like quote unquote taking your spot, because only you can do what you're doing. So that's how I feel about the things that I've made and my comedy and my writing and my, you know, brand or whatever. I just feel like no one's doing it like I'm doing it. And in that way, I'm not worried about competition, because I'm gonna build a career that I want and no one else can do that.
And like, as soon as you get that idea out of your head that there's a limited amount of room, then everything just feels great all of a sudden, because people can be doing similar things to you and you just switch your thinking from like, oh my God, who's doing this? They've done this. I haven't done this. To just like, oh great, there's just a whole bunch of women all doing amazing stuff. How good.
It's really been fun to watch too. And I think a lot of like women and LGBTQ plus, like the presence of those voices has grown so much even just in the last 4 years that I've been doing comedy. And that's really exciting to me. And I also think like, If you can remind yourself too that everyone is feeling the same way, that they're not doing enough, or someone might look at you and think like, I wish that I was doing what they're doing. It's like, we all struggle with the same problems and no one is like fully satisfied with their career. At least no one that I know. So there, we have a lot more in common than we have different, I think, when it comes
to that. Yeah, that's so true. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. We just have one final question that we're asking everyone, because the series is After Work Drinks With, which we would love to actually be having a drink with you. What is your favorite bar in New York and your drink of choice?
Oh, gosh. Well, my drink of choice is a tequila soda / a pineapple. Or a margarita.
I find that funny.
Everyone's like, what is that? I only drink tequila. Sometimes I'll drink wine, but mostly it's tequila. And you have to really cut that with something else. Otherwise I'll black out in like 5 minutes. But as far as my favorite bar, probably 169 Bar, which is in Chinatown. And it got really popular because it was like in a couple of movies over the last few years. But when I first moved to New York, it was like around the corner for me. And they have really good coconut shrimp randomly. So it's like very divey and gross, but I have a lot of memories there. A lot of good times.
Sounds very up our alley.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. We're very stoked to chat to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We will hopefully see you live soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.